bit of housekeeping. I'm hosting Taking Stock this week. Times is away. He's doing a little visit with the family. So I'm taking the host seat for this week, and we've got John Wooten and Fubar here to chime in with their personal knowledge with all things open source. Trying to think for updates for YDRS. I think things are still moving along nicely. We've kind of started lining things up, hopefully for the 5013C, whatever you call it. Hopefully moving into a more official space with YDRS and opening a lot of different avenues for just potential in the future for attending big events and applying for government grants, all sorts of kind of exciting stuff. There we go. I see John's joined. I'll just send him an invite to come up and chat. There he is. How are you doing, John?
Doing stellar. Thanks so much for leading it off. And if there's a little echo, I've got the mic on the phone here, and we're just going to be using that in this room. So I will try to keep it as minimal as I can. But as long as everything comes through clearly, that's the goal. Got a couple of people here. The largest factor is going to be Anuha Chalagundla. She's been at the Stellar Development Foundation just about 3 years now and has done a lot of advocacy and relations work there. She's also an advocate for Major League Hacking. And technically in her past, she's done some development work in law and on messaging standards and was a software engineer at an Australian security firm and JP Morgan. And also did some work coordinating Naval Academy robotics standards and programs. And she has been a really big leader in the community at Stellar, focusing specifically on giving incentives to open source and blockchain projects. She's been an active director in hacking communities and executive governor at Children's Nonprofits. So definitely someone I think very relevant to this discussion. Welcome, Anuha.
Yeah. Hi. I was like, should I join with my Twitter here
as
well?
By all means. Feel free.
Send over the link here.
Yes, I will have to share via.
But yeah.
How are you guys going? What's your handle?
Anuxhya.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining. That's a very pleasant surprise. I love having extra experts on the topic come and chime in with this stuff. As I said just before John joined in, I'm quite the layman when it comes to this stuff. So I'm going to be the average Joe that you can kind of try and explain things to, and hopefully I'll understand. Like, I get open source as a concept, and you know, it's an amazing thing to be able to share technology and information like that. It democratizes access to a lot of this stuff. But beyond that, I am a blank slate. So yeah. Please enlighten me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess let's take a step back here, right? And take a quick, what does open source really mean to you? Vivek, I'm just curious, what is your definition of open source? Or I guess, John, you're going to chime in here.
I mean, for me, it means kind of coding or any kind of asset that is free to use, almost like public domain for media stuff. It's free for anyone to take and also work on. So I think as well, we've set up a Lemmy instance because it's an open source social media platform that's federated. And yeah, it allows anyone to contribute to the project. So even someone like me could figure out like a patch or something in the code and contribute that. But I have no idea how that's facilitated, so I'm very curious to hear more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think John, you, what does open source mean to you?
I think it's something where a community of unique individuals, maybe not everybody is in the same company, maybe they're even competitors, but they come together to work on a specific tool, specific instance of something that can be a standard across an industry, and everyone contributes together. It's very transparently documented and open for anyone to learn from, to contribute to, and even to fork, copy it, and make a whole new thing based. And it's all based on this idea, in my view, of abundance in terms of the code is just, it's just code. You know, the developers are the ones behind it, but the code is just product and it's public thing that people can use.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And I think going into like open source to me is one of the most empowering things, right? The idea that any developer across the globe can actually contribute to, for example, let's take Stellar, right? You could contribute to Stellar's code base. You're like frustrated with a particular aspect, you're like, I wish this feature existed. Well, you can build it. You're allowed to build it. And in fact, we have many ways to incentivize that kind of development. We'll get a bit more into incentives later on. But the power of open source truly is amazing. And in fact, I used to do a bit of work with Homebrew, if you are familiar with Homebrew at all, right? I'm as a developer. So I remember I contributed not too much to Homebrew, but the fact that I was able to do something to Homebrew is like mind-blowing, right? It was through the Google Summer of Code program, which basically allows and incentivizes folks, young students in college to contribute to open source projects. And that was one of my pivotal moments where I was like, shit, wait, open source? It's awesome. Now, making that decentralized, having the ability to use put real-world use cases and utility and putting that on-chain with Stellar, that's like, dude, I'm living in like my dreamland right now, right? It's awesome. Though I don't necessarily develop as much anymore, I'm not really a developer anymore. I'm more focused on bringing other developers that would be super excited to what I'm doing and or what I once did, and incentivizing them to come and build awesome products with utility on chain at Stellar, right? With Stellar. And so that's what I do. So I help run the Stellar Community Fund with Anka, who runs the community fund herself, and Gemma, and this is my awesome ecosystem growth team. So yeah, other questions in regards to incentives and things like that? I'm happy to answer.
So what was your first foray into seeing any kind of incentives around open source development? Obviously, there's the benefit of the public good and the work that you can do on your own and build out features that you want that have a benefit to you, but also benefit to everyone else using the project.
Right.
When's the first time that you ever saw that combined with some sort of
incentive? I would say Google Summer of Code was my first incentive and like viewing lens into open source. The program helped me understand that I can be paid to be a summer intern for Google Summer of Code, which I was like, what the heck is that? But actually, Google does this whole open source projects, and same with GitHub, right? So GitHub also had a similar program as such. So these are my main touch points for my entry into open source incentives. After that, I realized that Stellar Community Fund, the fact that we have an entire community fund that encourages open application grant program that basically wants people to build on Stellar and contribute to the open source code base or to utilize the open source code base and to build awesome projects on top of that, right? So Stellar is another really awesome one for that. But yeah, for the community fund.
Thanks, Anuja. Can you tell us a little more about the Google Summer or some of the GitHub projects and how exactly that works? You're paid, and are you just working at home on the same project you'd normally be working on? What's that look like from the developer side?
Yeah, absolutely. So from the developer side, it was essentially, it was in the summer. I was pretty young, I would say. And you apply for the fellowship program, and they look through your application. They're like, oh, cool, you had some level of some developer experience. That's awesome. And then you get put with a mentor, and the mentor then helps you understand what you need to build on chain, like on the project that you've gotten assigned to. You get to pick and choose the projects, and then you go from there. So, yeah.
So how did the mentor help you with your contributions?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, validation, right? Like, it's intimidating. Imagine, like, contributing to Homebrew or, like, React, right? Like,
oh my gosh.
Or Stellar, for that matter, in fact, right? It's very intimidating. You're like, holy shit, this is, like, a real product, I could break something. I mean, obviously your PRNs aren't going to get accepted if you're going to break something. But point being is, when your PR does get accepted, it's like, holy shit, I just made a PR, right? That kind of moment of like, and this is now a project and a product that others are going to utilize. I mean, it was minor, like nothing even. But even that PR getting approved was just kind of crazy, right? So my mentor really just helped with validation of things. And in fact, we're actually looking to have a similar program for Stellar. This is the first time you're going to hear about it. And I'm going to preface this for my legal team's sake that this is a hypothetical program that we're currently working on. We're taking that and adopting it to the Stellar ecosystem, right? Where we have all these awesome open source projects building on Stellar. But in fact, what if we're able to open up and incentivize early college students and just folks who want to be builders and contribute to open source, but for Stellar projects, and match them with mentors within our awesome ecosystem, within the community. In fact, John, you could be a mentor and help someone write a couple lines of code and contribute to those open source projects. So we're currently looking to make a fellowship program, like an educational fellowship program out of the Stellar Community Fund eventually. So stay tuned for that. Wow. But yeah, I'm really excited.
There's
for
a big
it.
Announcement.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty, it's not an announcement. It's a look at like currently exploring down the track, but yeah, very likely to happen currently. So yeah.
Well, you have an incredible and very interesting program with the Stellar incentives based on crypto through Stellar. Mm-hmm. Can you talk me through your own journey? It was most of your work open source? Before crypto, was there a big change that happened to you after crypto got involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of my work was not really open source necessarily. There was a point where I was working at a neobank called Envil, Envil.ai. It was a fintech neobank that used AI to help folks budget properly. What it was is essentially a personal financial advisor in your pocket is how we put it. Imagine your Chime, your Monzo, but with a debit card attached to an envelope system of putting money away, where let's say you had your sister's birthday coming up and you wanted to buy a car, your money automatically, the direct deposit will automatically get saved away into those different categories. But your debit card is associated to that particular envelope. So this project of ours, eventually our goal was to make it open source and let others contribute to it, make it a better project. That was kind of the founder of that really sparked my interest of what the heck is open source. And then eventually went on into talking about actual, like, the fintech open source was like a passion of mine. Then I realized there's a world of blockchain, right? The decentralization where, and I was like, wait, this is actually really cool. That's the ideology behind decentralization is this. So that's kind of my segue to being at Stellar now. Yeah.
Wow. It sounds like you have a lot of experience on that front. Does that make sense to everyone? Does anyone have any questions up to this point for Anuhya?
One thing I wanted to just clarify for everyone, earlier, Anuhya, you were talking about PRs, and I'm assuming you're talking about pull requests,
yes.
Which is kind of like the updates to the code that you submit to the repository. Is that the right word?
Yes, that's correct. So a PR is basically...
Oh, no, I think we've lost them. Just when I was getting my answer, my question answered. Hopefully, I should reconnect soon. It looks like I'm still connected. I think hopefully everyone can still hear me as well. If you can't hear me and you're on your phone, just give us a little emoji. Oh, you're back. You guys cut out just as you were getting into what a pull request is. Aha. There we go, got Anuhya coming up. Yes.
Yes. Okay, sweet. I don't I guess we disconnected there in the minute.
Yeah, just as you were getting into the answer, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, as I was saying, a PR is basically when you're... sorry, guys. So a PR is when you're able to submit a... update to the code, and a pull request is then accepted because now you've officially contributed to that code base. That's what a PR is. Have that made sense?
Yeah. I always kind of thought there might be something more to it because it's a funny kind of label for it. I'm assuming there's some etymology behind it, but
I don't think so. Pull request. I don't know. Now we're getting into the Git versions, and I'm happy to we can talk about Gits and cloning and forking and the more of the logistical aspects of what is like how does open source actually work.
Yeah, actually, speaking of forking, yeah, there was back in a couple of years ago, we tested out a DAO on the Loopring blockchain, and the kind of NFT expert that we were working with, he actually created a fork for Loopring to allow voting using, you know, Loopring tokens or NFTs to vote with the DAO, and it was kind of like what you're saying about. Your kind of first experience of being able to like contribute to something big. You're like, oh wow, this is real. It was mind blowing that we had that kind of access to something that we felt very, you know, far removed from. Me doubly so, but the fact that, yeah, someone we knew could just bash out that code, submit it, it gets added. And then like within a day we had a functioning DAO. It was wild.
Yeah, exactly right. And the fact that you're able to, for example, go into I love like sometimes there are like times where I'm like, man, I wish this project existed, right? Or this product existed. But in reality, what I do is just go into simply go into GitHub sometimes and just search up like, oh, like, is there like a tool, like a screen sharing tool for this. And if I have even something adjacently similar, right, you could just fork that and make it your own, right? There's a reason why people make things open source, so that the project can get better because there is the idea of a community around it, right? So recently I was like, oh, as a presenter, it'd be really nice if I had like a screen sharing, like a live coding screen share tool potentially. And I saw something on GitHub that was remotely close to what I was looking for. Didn't have like a Clicker facility. So I took another open source project that was a Clicker and combined the two together and made my own little project, right? I didn't really submit a PR for it. I also, like I mentioned, don't code as much. But every now and then, I like to Frankenstein open source projects together to build something. And it's a lot faster than building something much more intense, right?
Wow. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So now I understand the difference now between a pull request and a fork, because to me before it was basically the same kind of thing, but that makes a lot more sense now.
A fork is when you're basically, or like when you're making an entirely new, larger project, whereas pull request is you're making a minor update, right? And you're cloning a project is obviously you're copy-pasting an entire project.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Of course. Other questions before
So one of the things you touched on is the size of contributions. How have you seen the incentives align with how large someone contributes to a project? So with Stellar, for example, there's sort of a core team that does a lot of developments and then an ancillary community team that might have small little revisions now and then. Have you seen that a lot in your work?
What do you mean by that in terms of like a small, like small contributions versus larger?
Well, you know, thousands of lines versus just a couple of changes.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, we're about to have a bounties program soon where it allows for you to contribute to our documentation, right? One of the cool things about this is it's not just coding, right? You could even go change our documentation as open source, meaning that you find a typo, you can go edit that, and you're making a pull request to edit that tiny little typo, right? There's a way for you to get, like, there's incentives for you to contribute to a documentation. We're going to call it DocuSource. It's going to be like a Docathon, I think is what we might call it. Still workshopping that title right now. But basically what it is that we're making a doc sprint where people, we want them to go contribute open source to our documentation and make it better. If you're like, oh, I wish I had a tutorial on this. Okay, instead of wishing, why don't you contribute? And in fact, the foundation will incentivize you to write that. So Bree, one of our technical content writers who runs the documentation at the foundation,
is actually helping run that bounty program soon. But yeah.
Wow.
Yep, yep.
And how does with maybe other systems that you've seen, like a Gitcoin, for instance?
Sure. What was the question again? Sorry.
Is it the incentive is you get sort of a Lumen bounty?
Yes, you do. So you would get Lumens, right? You're incentivized by getting XLM awards.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And just out of curiosity, who are the kind of people that you're trying to attract with these bounties and these incentives? Is it just like hobbyists or students or like seasoned professionals in the kind of coding space?
Yeah, right. It's actually everyone, right? Everyone that you had just said. The idea is that at the foundation, we have many different opportunities, right? We have opportunities from breaking into Web3 is actually not that high barrier of an entry. Yes, you need to understand how blockchain works, but we have EZA, which is a Duolingo of Web3. In fact, I'm at the hackathon right now that's run by EZA, that if you're like, oh, I'm curious to learn what EZA is and Web3 is, you can, in fact, go ahead and download their app and just get started, right? The barrier of entry for onboarding into a developer like mindset for Web3 isn't as high because you could just jump in, you're incentivized to start tinkering. So to answer your question, Bibi, everything, one. Two, let's say you're a student. You have an idea and you want to get started. EZA is one. Two, we have a single startup camp, which basically allows you to go through the process of building an end-to-end project and validating your idea on specifically how to build that by the usage of mentors, so on and so forth. That's startup camp. Then a student, right? For example, you're just a student. You're like, yo, I need to make some money on the side. In fact, our documentation-based sprint that you could contribute to our documentation, you're incentivized to make money off of that as well. So to your answer, anyone, right? Anyone from my younger brother who's 15 years old could be on here trying to do some awesome stuff to... In fact, we had one of our very own community members, TDAP, contribute and write a full-on protocol upgrade to the Stellar network, which is insane. I mean, imagine contributing and upgrading, like writing an update to the Stellar network itself, right? So anyone to your answer, Vivek. But yeah,
Fubar? That's amazing. That is incredible. So you can have not only looking for the specific bounties you set up, but you can also come with your own ideas and be mentored through to see them through to fruition. Am I understanding that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Wow.
Yep. But yeah, of course. Any other questions? Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Yes. I was just wondering if you could explain a little bit more about how the process of like receiving a bounty works. Like, let's say I've opened up a pull request for like the new documentation. What's to ensure that I actually get the bounty from that versus someone kind of like just lifting my pull request?
I mean, it's associated to your GitHub account, so it's your unique bounty. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess what I was trying to say, like, let's say I spent, you know, like 5-10 days working on something and then I've opened a pull request.
Mm-hmm.
How is it guaranteed that like someone won't just copy my pull request and I'll actually receive the bounty? Does that make sense?
Yeah, which is why we have version control, right? So, I mean, this really depends on the specific bounty program, so on and so forth, right? One, there's version control, which if you're in GitHub and living in GitHub and contributing to GitHub, everything is documented and tracked on its own, right? You'll as long as you're making updates consistently, you'll see when you're working on it. So if that did come down to cheating, right, you can always just look at the version history of someone's code base and determine whether or not they copy-pasted or they actually built it over time and have worked very, like, put effort and time into it.
And how do you determine, like, that someone did work, excuse me, work that's good enough to receive a bounty? Like, how do you determine completeness?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's dependent on the bounty, if I'm being specific, Fubar. So that, to be honest, I don't have the exact... like details of what that would look like just yet, because the bounty program is currently, we haven't released our new wave of bounties. But if you go back and look at, there's a thing called Sora Bonathon First Light. If you Google that in GitHub or there's a SOAR bounty program. These are all bounties that were set in place. You can see what submissions look like in the past. That would be a good understanding of what a particular open source bounty program could look like. But as of now, we don't have one up and running just yet.
Okay. Thank you very much.
New version. Yeah.
Answering my questions.
Yeah. You seem to have a holistic grasp on the bounty incentives.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there any central coordination and planning? Say you have something that needs to get fixed. Do people bid on it and say, I'll do this, and then it's locked for a few days? How do you handle that, assuming everything's open for anyone?
You know, John, you could come on in and help us contribute to and help grow that kind of community aspect, right? So instead of the bounties, I want to talk a bit about the Stellar Community Fund, which is kind of adjacent to this, right? The Community Fund, we have verified members and panelists that help us understand whether, I mean, we're not talking about individual bounties. We're talking about actual projects that are asking for incentives to continue to build on Stellar, not just on the infrastructure side, but also on the dApps end and on protocol levels and whatnot, right? On DeFi protocols. So once you submit your application, it then goes through the process of a verified panelist review, which allows us to understand whether or not they are like able to build, and they get an activation award, after which they've completed and shown their deliverables of that they have done that. They can then apply for a community fund award, which is up to 100K, where the community votes on those projects, essentially. So I hope that kind of answered your question there of what is the process of verification. Is we have people that have gone through the process themselves that are now giving back to the community and helping review PRs and whatnot.
Okay. And their incentive is just to see the whole network grow?
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
We're just trying to build an awesome ecosystem with real-world utility. That's really what it comes down to at Stellar.
Now, it's my understanding that a number of open-source contributors to Stellar have gone on to join the Stellar Development Foundation.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
Honestly, there's no process, John. There's really just keep contributing. And if you're interested in joining the foundation, apply. And you definitely get a significant leg up on most applications or applicants that come in because you've already experienced Stellar. You've already been building and have been a builder in the ecosystem. So you really just get a level up. There's no real process around that, though.
Yeah. I didn't mean just like the SDF application process, but I mean, like more generally, if some open source developers, maybe they're contributing to certain projects.
Yeah. Well, we have infrastructure grants. We have the community fund, right, for helping with infrastructure growth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where you can come to the foundation, ask for like, hey, like I need some incentives and funding to continue to do this.
And do you see that as a normal? Is that what you normally see? Is someone it does a lot of work for a couple of months, mm-hmm. a couple of years, and then at some point they apply to join to be part of a foundation? Just in terms of sustainably continuing their work, what do you normally see, Anuka?
Most people go on to build awesome companies using Stellar, right? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Most people are building startups. They're all innovators and builders. They're going on to build startups, really. That's what we see. More than the contributing to code base to working at the foundation, it's like contributing to the code base, understanding how to make cool projects on Stellar, and then building something where users are actually utilizing it.
Okay.
But yeah. It was great chatting with you, John. Any other questions?
Likewise, Anuhya. It sounds like you have really thought a lot about making sure that the funds get allocated to developers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been a big part of your own journey? Was it just those initial grants early on that led you sort of down a career in this path? Or how has it affected maybe some of the developers that you know?
I don't necessarily think that it has. I think the idea of being able to, going back to, I don't want to keep harping the same notes here, right? But I think the idea of being able to make an impact into a tool that everybody can potentially use one day. And in fact, a project and a product that I myself am using is one of the most exhilarating things, right? That's what I think is like the best incentive of all of this for the common good, right? Mm. But yeah.
Wow.
So would you say that Stella has seen a lot of benefit from all of this open source incentivizing? Do they get a lot of benefits from all these different perspectives coming in and adding to their code?
Absolutely, right? Going back to Stellar, we are building for the unbanked population, right? And that unbanked population, a lot of them is not in America. In fact, we have builders in Africa, we have builders in India, in Latin America, that feel the real difficulty of being able to bring money onto their continent. In Africa, specifically, we see many creators who are like, I have all these ideas, but I can't even move money to my continent. Well, you know what? Screw all these ideas. Let me build an idea utilizing Stellar that's an open source tool. I could go take this and make it my own. I can build with this project right now, right? That is what really, that perspective is what is incentivized to help make the network better, right? So yeah. To your question, 100%.
It sounds like, in a world, like, we've got a lot of companies that try and be as private as possible and build a lot of walls and fences and try and protect their IPs, but it seems like going the other way and opening it all up for everyone seems to have been a lot more beneficial for Stellar.
Right, exactly. Better products, right?
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. But yeah,
I wish more companies took on board.
And I think they do. A lot of them do, and I think we're seeing that trend now in the industry for sure.
Yeah, it's refreshing.
Yep.
Any big challenges limiting that trend?
To be honest, I'm not that much of an open source geek that I would be able to really define the challenges across the board. But I think oftentimes there's a question of buy, build, or contribute is now a thing, right? Buying new software, building your own software, or contributing to an existing one to make it better. I think a lot of folks are presented with that in the space, but yeah. Okay. But yeah, any other questions here before we wrap up?
So there's nothing from online. Are there any questions about open source incentives that I should have asked you, but completely glossed over?
No, honestly, my thing is, look, it's not, the barrier of entry is low enough that you can get started today, right? You could just kickstart that idea, go look at the Stellar documentation, start by contributing to the documentation, if anything, right? If you're like, I'm not even technical, I just need to understand this, go start trying to use the documentation. If you run into an issue, go make a pull request to update that, right? Be like, yo, we need this in the documentation. Could be a simple enough pull request as such. A comment there is enough for you to make a difference by your making your minor contribution into open source projects. So, yeah.
Well, thanks so much for sharing, Anuka.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me. Thanks, Bibik. Thanks.
It's been a pleasure. Always a pleasure to have someone who knows what they're talking about come on and chat with us. It's,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. I am good.
Well, I guess the Wi-Fi has taken the hint and disconnected Anusha just on her way out there. But that was fantastic. That was a really, really pleasant surprise. I thought we were just going to have John joining us today with his open source experience, but Anusha clearly has fathoms and fathoms more of this kind of experience even before joining Stellar. I've put up in the Nest, and these will be in the show notes too, there's a link to the community fund with Stellar, so you can check that out for yourselves, as well as an article written by Anchor, Anusha's, I think, partner at the Stellar Community Fund, kind of covering the, I think, 5 years that it's been running now. But yeah, it sounds like the incentives go both ways for open source. It's good for the goose and the gander at the same time. So I'm very, very curious to see where that goes, especially with Stella and for anyone else. I'll see if I can get John back in here and he can talk more about his open source. He's just joined. So now John's back in. I'm hoping, John, you can talk to us a bit more about the open sourcing that you've done with Block Transfer, because that is kind of coming in, creating a new business and just going, yeah, and this is going to be available to everyone is very paradigm shifting or revolutionary, however you want to put it. But I think it's going to cause a shift in the transfer agent and wider market space if it really takes root, which, I mean, I'd be shocked if it doesn't, because it seems to be such a no-brainer for investors and issuers alike. It will cut costs for all of them and make things a lot more efficient and transparent, and it's so much easier to audit. Do you want to tell us, John, about why you decided to go open source with Block Transfer?
Yeah, well, I hope that helped. It's definitely a concept that has not been, it's sort of, you know, open source Wall Street, sort of my mantra. And if we can do that, we can get rid of the middlemen, we can remove their control and their monopolistic rents, in my view. I know I did ask, and I've got certainly some stories queued up, but wanted to bring Fubar into the fold as a developer. I was wondering if he's done any open source work before and anything he's seen on that front.
I am familiar with open source, but I have not personally myself contributed to an open source project, though I have used them.
Uh-huh. You've used them?
So there's a lot of, like, even in private companies, you know, there's a lot of, you know, everything from logging frameworks to, libraries and utilities that are commonly used within software development. The only thing I've ever done, it's not quite open source, but I contributed a bug fix to the Java garbage collector at one point.
Nice. Very cool.
That's the closest I've come to doing something like that's in a commonly used project.
Yeah, that counts.
I have to say, I'm very excited for the future of Web3 and what it's enabling. As far as just what cannot be done safely or realistically today with Web 2.0.
Right. What are the biggest things you see that are limited by 2.0?
I'll give the, so like Web 1.0 was completely unsecured. Everything you're sending across the internet, anyone could see what you're doing. So it was, you know, great for having static web pages and sharing information. But it was not safe for doing, obviously, sending your credit card information to someone. Web 2.0 introduced the ability to send encrypted data across the web, which enabled, you know, your Amazons and all your interactive, you know, everything from Reddit to, Amazon to now we got like brokers and stuff like that you're just doing everything online. But you have to trust who is on the other end. I know I'm making a connection secure to someone, but I have to trust who is I'm sending my information to. And whatever that's happening on the other side. And that's led to this world where we have a highly centralized internet. Like we have Amazon, Google, and you don't really know what's happening to your information. As they say, like you are the product when you're getting a free service. I see Web 3.0 as being basically trustless computing where, you don't have to trust anything that's going on. You have smart contracts, it allows distributed computing. For example, like I can run a node right here in my house to, you know, verify the blockchain. Whereas like if I'm writing a web page, I have to host it in Amazon or somewhere. No one's going to trust that it's running on my computer. So like with decentralized computing and blockchain, I see we'll be able to distribute a lot more computing from these large monoliths like AWS and Amazon to everybody will be able to have things like these bounties where you're getting, that's why I was kind of asking her questions about that. Like, hey, I can just contribute to an open source project and actually have a smart contract set up where I get a bounty when I'm done with it. So it's just, I kind of hope to see the world of computing change from like these large centralized mega companies like Google and Amazon to a more open source distributed world where, you know, there's a lot more people who can contribute to the internet the way it was kind of more originally envisioned. Does that kind of answer your question?
Wow. That's incredible, Fubar. Yeah. Very broad and grand vision. Might I ask how you got into programming in the first place?
When I was like 10, 12 years old, I was playing video games. I'm like, how in the world do they make these things? And I looked into it, and I don't know if anyone ever remembers QBasic. I pulled that up on a Windows computer and just started programming like a text adventure, and the rest was history. So I just kept doing that throughout high school as a hobby and kind of made it my career after that.
Really? Wow. That's so interesting. It's just that curiosity, and then you had access to some public code and you could kind of learn off the web.
Yep. Yeah, I first taught myself BASIC. Then I was trying to, you know, I learned C++. I was just trying to make small little games and stuff at home. There used to be this thing called Dark BASIC. I don't know if this is going back years now, but it was for like a programming language for making games and stuff like that. That's how I kind of get into it. And then I went to college for it, and I'm not making games anymore, but I'm still, you know, in the industry.
They need to bring those websites back with all those amazing little coding games. Such a good way to get people into it on that base level.
Definitely. Now it's so, like, games are so complicated and advanced, it's kind of harder for someone to just, you know, make some small game and just put it out to the world. The early 2007, with the beginning of the App Store, it was a lot like that.
Yeah. So many crazy apps made back then, games, back in the flash game days. But yeah, it seems like nowadays with video games, you need a Unity engine or an Unreal engine, or now Fortnite, and you build your game, or Roblox even, and you build your game within that.
Because
like you say, it's too complicated to build from scratch.
It's nice to see things like, you said Roblox, or I think Minecraft, people make mods for that. Like, stuff like that is a great way to get into programming and actually make something that people can use.
Yeah, on that note, some of you guys might know about my first blockchain startup when I was in high school called Monerads. It was using a web miner, a web sandbox to run a Monero miner. Instead of ad block, you could mine crypto for like newspaper websites. And I sort of built it out with my buddy CJ, who I had met in middle school doing Minecraft work and development work, specifically building out a server and websites and things. And he would make his own things and put it out there, just like along those lines, Fubar, of learning on his own, just uncovering the functionality and the code online. And it seems, and that led to the skill set that helped had him there, and he helped build out the technology stack for that particular product. And I agree, and I'm sort of seems like we're on the same page here, that when the software is open for anyone to use, to learn from, to look into. You know, some of the games nowadays, they're opaque, and you can't really go into the depths of them. But then you look at the Web3 space and all the blockchains that are completely public and open source and transparent. Maybe if I'm reading it right, it sounds like an opportunity to better educate the next generation of developers in a really grassroots way without needing the permission of any institutions to go into the code bases.
Definitely.
Yeah, and do you think that, open source and Web3 seem to go hand in hand ideologically quite nicely, and blockchain technology along with that, just generally trying to create some equity for access to information and things that people are developing, and it, a rising tide lifts all boats and all that. And it seems to be a real meritocracy with what Anusha was saying earlier with Stella, like the cream rises to the top, that only the working pull requests get submitted. And then I think she was saying some of those people who do well and get incentivized end up going to be, making their own businesses. So it's not like you're even stuck with Stella or anything like that. It seems to be some people are stepping stone to something bigger. So it just seems like, a great way to get, your platform or whatever you're building built out, fully fleshed out, or even, a video game. And it's great for the people who want to pitch in. Sure, there's thanks to the internet, masses of people out there now that want to get involved with this kind of stuff, and now they can.
I definitely see Web 3.0 as kind of providing the missing link for the open source kind of revolution. Today, like, we're running, you just have to trust whatever software you're running. You your iPhone, you don't get to see what's on there, and you just have to trust Apple hasn't put anything bad on there. And it's also inefficient because you've got companies writing the same software to compete with each other. I'd love to see the world go to where everything we're running is open source. There's no duplication of effort. Everyone's contributing to the software. And you're able to see what code's being run, which, helps prevent, whatever your software you're using being malicious without you knowing. That's kind of the world I want to see, which is just every single piece of software you're using is open source and people are just getting paid to make contributions. And that sounds like what Stellar was doing, which is really cool. So.
Yeah, and I mean, hopefully it's something we might want to try and recreate with YDRS as we look to kind of seek to go down more of an organized route and try and create incentives for people to pitch in with advocacy efforts or building out the database or various resources on the website. It's inspirational to kind of see that it definitely works. For Stella, at least. I think our setup will be a little bit more voluntary and a little less fiscally rewarding, but being able to kind of contribute to that greater whole is that's why I got involved making broker guides. I was like, this is something I can cover. I may not know how the markets work or how puts and calls and things like that all come together. I'm just a buyer and holder.
So you're kind of envisioning like someone could put a bounty and say, I need a broker guide for this obscure broker, and it could incentivize someone to come along and actually create that content for your site.
Exactly, yeah. Or translation for that guide, like for a lot of guides that I've done before, we had a lot of pretty much all of them got translated into French by one person, like well over 100 guides. He just like smashed through all of them. And we had a handful of German people working on German translation. Wow. And so on. And then, we've got 10 different translations on a website, not on YDRS yet, but I hope to kind of replicate that. And we're building more efficient ways of getting that done as well. Thanks to other very tech savvy people. I went the long way around it on my first run and made it all a lot more work than it should be. But that's the benefit of getting extra perspectives in, because they're like, hey, you can do this a lot easier, you know. So I'm all for open source for everything.
Definitely.
It just seems socially wasteful that we would have four different companies building the same thing, like objectively same thing, but using, you know, quadruple the manpower, or, you know, quadruple the state, the resources, versus having a unified and efficient single service that works for everyone.
And yes, that's exactly my frustration with the current world is like, yeah, you've got people who spent their years building something, and you've got competitors building the exact same thing. And yeah, like computers, it just seems like much more natural to have a model where everything is public and people are getting paid to contribute to that public communal resource. It's just we haven't had something like blockchain to make that feasible. And the reality of open source today is actually like Linux is open source. There's lots of people who volunteer their time, but then companies use that open source to make money, and that doesn't get back to the contributors either. So there's just like a lot of kind of like injustices, so to speak, in how code is developed nowadays. And I'm really hoping to see that change.
Yeah, it's definitely not perfect by it, or even close. It's really interesting. I mean, there are like people that work full time at IBM just on Linux. And so it's like, well, do you really want to leave the market power of how we fund this development to, you know, almost a chance, because it's all done off of the actual Git contributions. And, you know, personally, community management and the incentives around the collaboration, they are not certainly the easiest thing in the whole world to do. You just heard someone who has spent a lot of time building it out with crypto that was sort of allocated from day one towards community incentives and alignments, which is really common in Web3. But it's also sort of reliant on building a, you know, an entirely new blockchain network that does all the things you would expect there to be in something like that. And that's, you know, that's not really something that can be done over and over and over again. You know, eventually you're just issuing some securities at a certain point and raising money for something because it's not, you know, to get the money by donation definitely seems, in my view, is like a really solid, sustainable and acceptable approach for finding those funds. Cause you know, eventually the initial startup of any kind of network will fade out after you have, you know, some of the initial contributions from the Stripes and the IBMs of the world. I remember at Monerads, I set it up where I would do a profit split off of the income with CJ. And I was my best efforts at the time in trying to keep everything efficient and low scale. And this is also why we have applied many times to the community fund and using those resources to in alignment with our advice to keep the focus on the product and the system so that you don't have to focus on maximizing the profits, and instead you can keep it structured for the benefit of the users in a fair, low margin and transparent system. Does that make sense? Are we all sort of on the same page on the open source part, and also just in general on the need or want for a blockchain transfer agent?
Absolutely.
I mean, definitely. I mean, preaching to the choir in these spaces for sure. I think anyone coming listening to the you know, these episodes are taking stock of the people who desperately want these changes to begin with. I think thanks to this online community, we're seeing that, yeah, maybe this is actually a reality we can make together. I think there's enough smart people around who can, you know, contribute to make something bigger. And yeah, I think everyone's just sick of the middlemen. So bring on the open source Web3 revolution.
Yeah, you can say that again, Vivek, with you there.
Yeah, I'm so ready for it. I'm just waiting. I'm so curious as to what's, you know, going to be the catalyst to kind of move people over to Web3 or blockchain. I think we need a kind of mass adoption event somehow. But it seems... In the meantime, there's this kind of nice steady progression of people learning about it and getting on board and wanting to be a part of it.
It needs its killer app. Like, you know, Excel was the killer app on the Mac when it first came out, like, what, 1980s. I don't think people are going to really even understand they're using blockchain when it takes off. They're just going to get something that they couldn't do before. And, you know, I don't know what, who's going to be the first killer app, but I think that day is coming within the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment I'm playing a blockchain-based game on my mobile phone, and it feels like a triple-A game. I think it could easily see mass adoption, and people won't even know they're trading NFTs, hopefully. I think that back end still needs a bit of refinement, but they're doing some amazing stuff in terms of streamlining that stuff.
I've always hoped to see like Pokemon cards be the first NFTs. Like, I know people, that seems like an obvious direction, but like if something like Pokemon was able to actually join the space, I think it would just catch on like, you know, wildfire. The biggest concern is, you know, the SEC and how these things are getting categorized as like if they put so much regulation on top of this where people are having to like file taxes because their 8-year-old is trading cards, that is the biggest kind of threat to this. But at the same time, I'll say that it's decentralized. Even if the United States makes problems, you know, this stuff could take off somewhere else. In another part of the world. So
yeah, and that's part of the beauty of it all being online, that we're all still connected through the interwebs, even if things can't be regulated as we want them in each country, it will still be going on somewhere else. And then yeah, it will force that mass adoption, because no one wants to be the last on the bus or on the boat.
Yes, and if it takes off in another country, like, you know, just pull one out of a hat, like Japan or something like that, that's going to force regulators' hands here as well, because people are going to be like, why can't I play that awesome game? So even that, I think, is not insurmountable, like as far as like government making it difficult.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yes, I mean, speaking of incentives, that's a pretty good one. but yeah, I think I don't know if anyone listening at the moment has any questions they want to come up and ask. But I think we're coming to the end of our hour. So I was thinking we could wrap up soon, unless John, you had anything else you wanted to add as well.
There's definitely a lot to it, and I think we really have a chance here to be that killer app for stock market infrastructure, open sourcing Wall Street, building a standard system. I will say Bob has started a thread on a blockchain transfer agent, and I wanted to go over some of his points, because Mahalo, he does think a lot about it. And if anyone's not familiar with the thread, it's under self-promotion in the public discourse. and specifically talks about the regulatory authority for American transfer agents, which comes into play, at least in my view, when you think about maybe the longer term implications of, say, we do have a system and it works really, really well. You know, something that at least for me comes to mind is Jeff Bezos's pitch for AWS, where he talks about a German brewery that ran their own electric generator for decades. Just like there are a lot of small producers, small fish in the market today, companies, issuers that have, there's certainly the couple that have their own transfer agent, but you know, the most of them that have sort of these legacy, slower transfer agent systems. And for this German brewing company, they had that in place for decades until a power company moved in and they could connect to the electric grid. And then because of the economies of scale, just having that one electric provider for the area, they immediately put the generator in a museum and connected to the grid. Just like, I think if we build the right system and the quality infrastructure here for the trading and settlement, then we can have the same thing for the stock market. Because as Jeff Bezos says, it really doesn't make the beer taste better, making your own electricity, that is. Just like having the old transfer agent paperwork system doesn't make the shareholder experience better, if not, you know, the opposite of that. His point is that there needs to be sort of one central, standardized, high-quality provider of that kind of service. And the reason why is because it's sort of undifferentiated heavy lifting, at least in power generation, for example. It's a very standardized commodity, one thing, do it really well. And I think that is really similar on the transfer agent side, on the stock market side, given the complexity of international securities laws, transfer agents that have to comply with capital controls, and really widespread consolidation in the public market that we've seen. And everyone can really benefit from one efficient provider, creating that flywheel effect that Anuja talked about.
That is a very good example, and I'm going to take it a step farther. The efficiency of having a centralized power source is that even when, like, I turn off my lights, that power can go to someone else. Web 3.0 and having decentralized applications, it's kind of going back to everybody having their own generator. But, and, you know, today it might be solar panels, for example, on your roof. But the fact that everything is decentralized and interconnected allows that efficiency to go back to the little guy. So you can be both efficient in scale and decentralized. And it allows me to still be like create power off my roof if I want to and sell it to people if I have extra. And I think that's kind of the next revolution that's happening with Web 3.0. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I love that thought of, yeah, when you turn your light off, that power goes to someone else. It's like being shared. It's a nice perspective. I hadn't thought about that before. And as John was saying, as like, if we can bring this generator metaphor to open source or blockchain transfer agent stuff, it will allow anyone to come along with their app or platform and just plug straight into the open source code for block transfer and work straightly from that central power source. And it does seem odd that, you know, we're talking about decentralization and Web3, but then talking about a central power source for this kind of thing. But there is a need for a central source to plug into. And at the same time, the central source is open source, so anyone can contribute and it's not centrally controlled or not centrally, like, you know, it'd be insane for one group of people to be like, yeah, we're going to make the best possible solution for this. Because there's always something people miss. There's a reason why, you know, why we have Nintendo, Sony, and Xbox making three very different kind of games consoles, and then loads of PC, you know, makers out there as well doing their own thing. But they're all plugging into the same, you know, video game experience at the end of the day.
I think we just lost John.
Well, yeah, he's requested. He's on some thin Wi-Fi, I think. Some thin signal. There we go, back in a speaker. I think it gets a bit messy on my phone after a while doing a space. It's like always a bit delayed or jumping around. But yeah, I think, yeah, that's a great kind of sentiment to kind of tie it all up in a bow with, like this aspect of open source being, you know, anyone can contribute, but also anyone can then come along and plug into it and make use of it. Like making, yeah, like the power grid or even, yeah, water and sewage and everything. It's a utility that we can all share and, you know, vastly improve our lives, I think. But yeah, unless John, you had anything else to add, I think we can wrap it up there. I think he just unmuted, and then maybe the Wi-Fi cut him off again.
Well, we can probably wrap it up. It was a good conversation. I appreciate you all having me on as well to contribute.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic getting a bit of extra personal perspective and experience with it. Because as I keep saying, I'm like, I don't know anything about this other than the, you know, the basics. I've read the cover of the book, but none of the contents. But it's, yeah, been an absolutely enlightening getting to hear a bit more of, you know, Anusha's actual experience with Stellar and working with the community fund there, and John's experience and with building this block transfer open source. And yeah, like you said, aiming to make that killer app, to make that fundamental change that you want to see, which, yeah, ties back to what Anusha was saying. It's kind of, instead of complaining that there's, you know, something you want to be in existence, you can just go and build it. Yeah, I think we're on the forefront of that right now with what's going on between all these crypto companies and what we're doing with YDRS and what John's doing with the block transfer. So exciting times. But yeah, I think that is a good spot to end. Thanks everyone for tuning in, listening in live, and thanks John for bringing Anusha along as well, and thanks to Anusha for her expert knowledge, and thank you Fubar for your expert knowledge too. It's great to have all these kind of perspectives, as we've been saying, you know, to contribute to open source, to contribute to these kind of advocacy efforts. It's amazing having such diversity, you know, me all the way over in England, you guys in America, but like covering all so many bases over there, and the wider community extending that even further, like across Europe and Australia and everywhere. It's kind of hard, easy to forget how big it can be, this kind of global community. Because we're all just little avatars or profile pictures online, but actually, we definitely add up much more to the, you know, bigger than the sum of our parts. But yeah. So yeah, thanks everyone again, and yeah, we'll hopefully see you all next week. I'm not sure what the topic's going to be, but I'm looking forward to learning some more with everyone else. Yeah, hope everyone has a great week. And we'll see you soon. Goodbye. See you.